And we are back. Dr. Birx, did you have anything you wanted to...
Not true. If the assumption of non-hostility turns out to be not true, and CSETI teams, when they go on board, have strange and unpleasant things done to their bodies, and we're allowed to return, I'll be the first to describe those encounters.
Is it not true?
We assume non-hostility, and that facilitates encounters. I'm not going to lead my team into what I perceive as an ambush or attack. It involves a certain amount of openness and trust. Some people say we're crazy. Some people will say we're brave. I think there's sufficient at stake to say that it's important enough to go out and try. Whether we are successful or not, I cannot say, but we're going to try to have these kinds of encounters.
Well, from your scientific perspective as a physician, and you have to go by the when you're practicing medicine, when you're working on a case, a patient, you have to operate from the scientific perspective.
Well, it's a clinical perspective.
Clinical.
And that's a very important distinction, because if I just wait for the person's heart attack to be diagnosed before I start treatment, he could be dead.
Right.
So I'll start treatment even if there's a suspicion a heart attack is present.
I'll
treat for three other diseases at once if each of those can kill the patient. I'll wait for the final diagnosis to come out once... patients.
Well, you have to start. Let me ask this question.
A clinical approach is what I think we need here.
If you have a patient, and for example, let's say you suspect that it may be a heart problem, you have to try to find out what the symptoms are. Is that correct?
Of course.
Okay. Now, when we're talking about the question of hostility or non-hostility, or perhaps we could even classify it as indifference, from the UFO intelligence, we have literally tens of thousands, if not many more people around this country and around the world that have alleged undergoing an experience that collectively today we call an abduction experience.
I've read those accounts, yes.
Okay. Well, we've had many people on this program. I've had Dr. David Jacobs on this program. I've had Bud Hopkins. I've had...
an artist.
Right. I've had the Close Encounter Research Organization with Yvonne Smith on this program.
Now, hypnotherapist.
Hypnotherapist. Now, for example, Yvonne and the people in her group, in the CIRO group, almost to a person, will state that this experience that they have undergone involuntarily. It is something that they, for the most part, do not like, they don't want. They have shown physical symptoms. They have shown scarrings. A number of them have alleged that these intelligences have implanted some type of device in their body against their will.
Any of these devices gone under evaluation?
Yes.
And they've been found to be extraterrestrial?
But no more beyond a shadow of a doubt than. Then CSETI.
That's a very good question.
Right. That's. I'm just using this.
That's right.
This legalistic term, as it was thrown up, bringing the evidence into court.
Exactly.
No, I think.
But my point. Well, let me finish now.
Oh, sure. Go
ahead. My point being that the fact is that we have a lot of individuals from around this country and around the world that have alleged undergoing this experience, and it was an unwanted, unpleasant experience.
How much time do I have to answer?
Oh, I think.
Can I have 2 minutes?
Sure. Phil Klass asked for 2 minutes right before he started screaming bull something on the air here a few months ago.
I'm a gentleman, so bull something for me.
No, but you see what I'm saying. There does seem to be a preponderance of evidence from many people that something unpleasant, if not blatantly illegal, and something that has basically taken away their human rights and dignity has been occurring.
Right, you were troubled about CSETI's documentation problems, and I'm troubled by them too. You'll have to also agree that alien abduction with all these supposed horrendous things has never been videotaped or has been photographed or any kind of objective evidence to show the actual interactions or crimes.
Absolutely.
As a practicing physician, I have to tell you that anybody who feels they've been hurt or feels they've been frightened does stir within me a certain amount of compassion. However, recalled experience or memories does not necessarily mean that's what happened. I'm sure your listeners are sophisticated enough to know that hypnosis is a technique that's not a truth serum, and that people are going to have experiences which they may or may not recall accurately under hypnosis. As far as the alien abduction experience, well, there are many people who say they're on board and they're not frightened. If you look at some databases, Strieber in his recent book, Breakthrough, talks about a large percentage of the people not really feeling one way or the other in terms of violation or spiritually enriching or positive, but as a bewildering type of experience. So I think that, again, hopefully I won't be excused of talking down to listeners, but the advantage of Cicetti's approach is that because we're not in an altered state, we can have these experiences that has the potential of actually being documented using videotapes and cameras on an ongoing basis. That is our hope, that we'll be able to add information on that subject. If we go on board and we film the inside of the craft, which albeit is a long shot, but it's something that's important enough that even if there's a very small chance that we will be successful, we should go forward and do so. I guess my 2 minutes are up.
Well, let me ask you just this, and then I would like to get your response. So from what I'm hearing, from your answer is that Cicetti is attempting in a very friendly manner to initiate contact, which up to this point has not yet happened. But it sounds as if you're dismissing all these reports from people that have claimed abduction from around the country. You're not accepting those. Is that correct?
I'm not accepting them as the final word. I think it's a little early to say that we've been victims of criminal acts, as you've implied. It's true people are being frightened, and I have no doubt about that. It's also people will say they've been frightened, and they come back a few months later and say, no, the interactions are better. I was confused. I mean, this is going back and forth in the UFO field for a very long time. I think the best way to know a phenomena is not to just trust evidence that's acquired in an altered state. A direct relationship, even if it's a negative one, an open relationship, we can learn more about the extraterrestrials. Now, if they have if they plan to do ill to us and to humanity, we're going to have to interact with them anyway. I was in the peace movement, and that's part of the reason why I'm involved here. Because if the extraterrestrials are as bad as some people tell us, we're still going to have to work out some kind of relationship through discussion and dialogue. Hopefully we can avoid another Cold War with the extraterrestrials or a shooting war with them. So the idea of meeting them and interacting and establishing dialogue, even if they are adversaries or, God forbid, potential enemies, is something that's reasonable.
Well, for the record, UFO Magazine and UFOs Tonight do not take the position that they're either beneficent or hostile. We're simply saying at this point we don't know.
And we're saying that they are approachable. At least that's what we're trying to do.
And you're also saying that they're extraterrestrial and that they're on several different kinds of missions. There's a lot of assumptions made.
That's in the monograph by Stephen Greer. However, you don't have to subscribe to any of this material to go out and practice the protocols and attract an interactive spacer. And that's the exciting thing for me about Cicetti. Basically, I approach our field work as something that's independent. All the working groups, and there's over 20 worldwide, we go out into the field when we want to. We modify the protocols to local conditions. We're strongly advised to change things in the protocols if they're not working and try something else. That's very pragmatic. Now, it may not be theoretical. It certainly doesn't reflect all the theory that's in Stephen Greer's monograph. Quite frankly, I want to get results. I'm not interested in practicing a theory.
But if it's an experiment, aren't the protocols supposed to be consistent among the various labs where the experiment's taking place?
That's right, and that's called reproducibility.
Right.
And in as much as the basic approach is there, sight, sound, and consciousness, using powerful lights, some kind of thought projection, using anomalous tones, you can say these approaches are similar. However, the way in which we utilize these locations that we go to, all these things are determined on a local basis because the local groups know the local conditions better than any central organization can.
Okay, we're going to have to take another break because we are at the quarter after the hour. And when we come back, Dwight had something he wanted to say. And then I think probably, depending upon how that goes, we will try to start taking calls sometime before the bottom of this hour. But just stand by. All right, we're back. Mr. Schultz, you had something.
Yes, I just wanted to read from the CSETI newsletter of May 1994, and this is a message from the director, Stephen Greer. I will edit some of this, but I'll point out what I'm doing here. The last 3 months have seen extraordinary, even historic, developments in the CSETI project. CSETI has launched Project Starlight, which is designed to educate world leaders, leaders in society, and the world's population to the fact that the Earth is being visited by advanced extraterrestrial civilizations. Now I'm making a little bit of an edit to get to a point. What I am about to write next is something which I would not have believed 6 months ago, but I feel that I must share this with you, since it is a significant new perspective that affects our overall strategy and thinking. Through a number of significant meetings, which I and others working on Project Starlight have had, I have reached the tentative conclusion that virtually all of the U.S.'s elected and appointed officials, including the President and the Cabinet members, are out of the loop on this subject. This is an informal opinion based on significant meetings with relevant and knowledgeable people. Exactly who, then, is at the reins of this whole area, both in the U.S. and internationally, remains a mystery. But we have a good idea of the nature of this group. It is probably multinational, multi-agency, quasi-governmental, quasi-private, extraordinarily secret. If true, this means a number of things. The President of the United States, the Cabinet, and perhaps even the Joint Chiefs of Staff may not be able to disclose anything on this subject, since they probably do not have access to the real information. And if they ask, I am not at all confident that they would be told the truth, if anything at all. Those controlling this subject may do so without any legal, constitutional, or moral authority, and this would be true both in the United States and abroad. Those controlling the subject should be approached and convinced that the world has changed and that it is time to also change the current policy of secrecy to one of increasing openness and disclosure. Not to do so is both dangerous and without rational or moral foundation. Knowledgeable and sincere civilians around the world must come together to collect the best available evidence on this subject and then educate world leaders in society and our fellow humans. Now,
bravo. Thank you.
You say bravo. I say he knows more than any person that I know, and he tells me that. And I have seen no proof of anything. And
well,
I have. And
I
may
agree.
I finish, please?
Oh,
please?
I agree with you. I'm agreeing with you. I haven't seen any proof on it either.
I haven't seen any proof. And when I have, for instance, looked at the tapes that you provided, and I remember Dr. Greer on 48 Hours screaming that he saw a UFO. He saw something. I didn't see anything, and neither did anyone else. And on that Encounters tape, the light, which he pointed out, was over the Pacific Ocean, which is the air corridor to LAX, which I look at quite frequently. He said, that's not an airplane. You could not tell what it was. I don't think anyone else could. So I saw Dr. Greer on tape in action. I've listened to him talk. I haven't seen everything. I haven't seen all of the film that you have, but I saw what was sent forward. I have read this, and I have listened, read writings from CSETI members. And the one thing that keeps coming at me is how much more you know than anybody else, and I see no proof. And this is why I get upset when you claim to be scientific, because not only do you claim to be scientific, but you claim to know more, and I see nothing. And on the back, it asks for contributions of up to $10,000. Isn't it at least...
You're not planning to contribute, I suppose.
No, I'm not. But isn't it at least a little immature to demand that we believe this without any proof?
I'm not demanding anything. I'm inviting people to go out and empower themselves to get their own proof. You don't have to believe me. I think if teams are enlightened and informed citizens want to go out and do this, they'll get their proof. The proof is being manifested over cities in Belgium and in New Mexico. The proof is being provided. Now, as far as Project Starlight goes, I'll have to agree with you there. Stephen Greer has put forward what I think is a splendid and brilliant analysis, but I agree. There is no proof of what he says in that newsletter. But let us assume that such a series of briefings and high-level meetings were going on. Might it not be prudent to respect the confidentiality of those high government officials and not blab their names over the radio and to facilitate further discussions? Now, it's possible that none of the things that Greer claims is true. Quite frankly, unless the President of the United States moves in a number of areas, like working towards an announcement that the UFO field will be removed from the extraordinary secrecy that it's been under, or even more specifically, releasing from their security oaths witnesses who happen to be high government officials or retired military officers, removing them from their security oaths so that they can address the public about what they know. Unless these measures are taken in sometime in the not too distant future, I question the value of Project Starlight.
I don't think there's anybody in this room that would deny that there has got to be a secret covert agency somewhere within the federal bureaucracy that have their thumb on this.
Or agents have been recruited from special sections of the intelligence service and work in an outside organization.
That's very conceivable. Let me finish my thought. Going back 50 years, it's been, I think, beyond any shadow of a doubt that there is a group somewhere that has been following this very closely, and they have great concerns about the national security. I think there's no question about that. Now, my question would be, and perhaps you don't even have an answer to it, Joe, but why would Dr. Stephen Greer suggest that perhaps even the President, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, some of the highest members of government could be out of the loop? That doesn't seem to make any sense, but yet he's suggesting that he himself is in the loop.
I can only answer that in a speculative way. I wasn't at the meetings, and if I were, it would be, I think, imprudent for me to, and such meetings were going on, to sort of name the high-level officials that were talking to this lowly UFO organization. Let's face it.
Oh, I'm not asking you for names.
So what I can say is this, is that if these objects have been obtained by select sections of the intelligence services and back engineering is going on, not necessarily under government's control, but under corporate control, then you would not have to worry about necessarily keeping the President and the military and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, because the secrets would be protected as trade secrets. The millions or billions of dollars that could be generated from the back engineered technology could then continuously support the covert actions, the secrecy campaign, or a variety of other projects that would be crucial in controlling this issue. Now, that's speculation. I assume this
is... But do you really believe the federal government would allow private industry to get their hands on something like this and not have control on it? Now, that's not to say that they may not want McDonnell Douglas or Lockheed or somebody like that to attempt to back engineer at some remote secure location, providing they had their hands on a recovered craft. But still, the government is not about to put themselves out
there. There is historic circumstances suggest that even presidents change their mind on this subject. And the perfect example is Carter, who went into office claiming that he was going to open this up, and you didn't hear a peep out of it. It's as if someone told him something that perhaps...
And shut him up.
Now, if that someone is a complex organization within the CSETI group, we kiddingly refer to them as PI-40, or you can say MJ-12-like, or whatever name you want to apply to the controllers. You know, if they have vast resources available and they can shut up the President of the United States, as what happened implied was possible, then it's possible they could keep other sections of the government out of the loop.
I think it would be more likely that they said something to the effect of, Mr. President, this is the information that we've collected over a half century. This is why we feel it would certainly be outside of the national interest for you to release this information, because of thus and so. at which point the president would say, yeah, you're probably right, I'm not going to talk.
The world has changed a lot since 1947. And one of the principles that CSETI is trying to put forward is that with the end of the Cold War and new openness around the world, as we emerge as a global civilization, isn't it about time that instead of ridicule and denying witnesses, instead of carrying out a massive campaign of secrecy, that an enlightened change in government policy occurs? That's the thrust behind Starlight. Whether it succeeds or not, in anyone's guess.
There's nothing wrong with that, but when the international director of the organization comes out and says that the Joint Chiefs and the President are out of the loop, and says it is a fact, and says a lot of other things that are assumptions about what the intelligence is or what the force is behind the UFO, without any substantiation or corroboration, you have a problem with the whole paradigm of being scientific, which is it's just a problem.
It's a political assessment. It's different. I think this has to do with policy, and I think we're mixing apples and oranges.
You're right. It is, but there is correlation here. In other words, would you not say, and I'm reasonably, that a reasonable person could read these statements, could look at some of this film, could say, where is the proof, and say, wait a minute, just show me something. Don't ask me to accept.
I would suggest that you learn the protocols, and if you want, we can go out in the field sometime, and we'll perhaps be lucky enough to attract some craft. I think people, seeing is believing, and millions of people are seeing these objects. It's no surprise to me that both President Carter and President Reagan, when they were governors of their respective states, had sightings. Millions of people are having sightings.
People have sightings, but people don't often claim that they vector in craft and communicate.
Have they tried?
I think many people have. I've tried. I've gone out and sat there and blinked my lights and blinked flashlights up in the air. I have. Nothing ever happened. And this is my point. My point is
Are you scared of the extraterrestrials?
No, I'm not. I don't know what's there. I certainly believe, and this is, I certainly believe as a scientist, I see those scientists, the physicists, for instance, who were looking for the top quark for so many years, they didn't know that the quark existed. They all admit it. They spent 30 years seeing traces of something, not being able to say, nor would anyone, after laboring 14, 15 hours every day, would they say it was there. Just looking at the evidence, only if they actually could find it, would they say it. That is scientific. That is the scientific method. Even though they may have assumed it was there, they could not say it, because that is scientific. And what we have here, and I have nothing against anybody. I became interested in this field basically because of pilots who told me what they saw. And I believed them, but I had no proof. But it was my belief, and I can say it's a belief, but I cannot say it's scientifically proven. This is my problem. And when I look at this organization making such grandiose claims with so little proof, and I read a newsletter like this where the director says, I know something that the president doesn't know. He's out of the loop. And if he was even to ask for information, he couldn't get it.
I think he said that was a tentative assessment. I think there's some qualification.
This is, probably. Yes, he said probably. But even so, I couldn't even assume in my lifetime to say
In a few months or years, you want to have Stephen Greer here, he might be able to answer this question.
Well, that's certainly something I'm going to extend an invitation to.
Thank you.
We are at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take another break. When we come back, I'm opening the phone lines. So if you've been waiting, call. And we are back. I am going to throw the phone lines open. And I'm sure we got a lot of people out there with a lot of questions. Let's see. I'm going to go to Fullerton. I've got Dave calling in on, Comcast, I believe. Dave, good evening.
Hi, Don, Vicki, and Dr. Birx, and Mr. Schultz.
Hi, Dave.
It's interesting because the last time I called, boy, Don, Vicki, you sure know how to get them riled up. The last time that I called in was the night that you had Carl Flott on, Don, and I called and tried to get Darren yelling and screaming at him to tell him John from Atlanta, Georgia was the infamous Bill Cooper. Not since then have I felt so impassioned about one of your guests. Dr. Birx, can I ask you one simple question first? I want to state everything that you have stated so far, with that Don has stated tonight, about 50-50. Never say never. I can go either way on this. I'm a neutral observer here because you said you were being ganged up on. Are you an emergency room physician?
Yeah.
You are? Okay, along with Dr. Greer.
Well, he's in North Carolina. I'm in
Los
Angeles.
Well, I mean, but you are in the same field.
Yes.
Okay. Let me also just state very briefly that the Area 51 special, the ridiculous no reason special that Larry King held out of 51, Dr. Greer, and I have to, and I'll go back and forth here. Dr. Greer was the only one that had the most brilliant thing to say out of the entire wasted couple of hours.
Thank you.
Which was, go with your gut, was his suggestion when Larry King asked, what do? Do you take a ride? It's an incredible question. I mean, an emergency room physician, I would expect to answer exactly that way, go with your gut. Now, you and Dwight and Don and Vicki have been in this once again, a UFO maelstrom of argument, which Don being the 50-50 and you stating the letter that Dwight just read, let me just ask you a question. You said, and let me understand this before I make the statement. You said that light, sound, and vibration, or light and sound, are your two main response modes with communication with whatever these entities are.
No, actually, light, sound, and consciousness. Consciousness being
thought projection. Okay, the psi that you referred to earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, I'm not saying this to be facetious or sarcastic, because this is pretty much public knowledge now. It's gotten out everywhere. November 16th and 17th of 1993, there was a classified conference that was sponsored by Los Alamos Laboratories. It was held at Johns Hopkins Medical University, Kosiakoff Center, Applied Physics Laboratory.
Right, I'm aware of that.
All right. You're aware of the conference?
Yeah, sure.
Now, that was a secret session.
Department of Justice people also.
Okay. That was a secret session conference. And do you know what Dr. Teller spoke of as a keynote speaker the first night?
I don't recall reading about that.
The advanced, unapplied technologies and the sea of opportunities in light, vibrational, and sound warfare, and the equipment that was available for not only non-lethal defense, but lethal. And by the way, the conference guide went into the fact where you say the world has changed. What has changed? The world hasn't changed. The world has gotten to be, let me tell you, a much more dangerous place than ever. We have Chechnya and the Russian Republic. We have Bosnia and the
Serbs.
Well,
Dave, I'm going to have to ask you to make your point.
Okay, my point is this. Light and sound, as an emergency room physician, doctor, let me appeal to you, please. Light and sound is being currently used in some of the most advanced areas of the military. You're taking the public out into the desert as a medical physician and risking literally life and limb with somebody that wants to take toy options on the desert floor. You were on a 48-hour special, and Dr. Greer goes with his video camera, Dan Rather tromping along, and Dr. Greer clearly says, it's a contact, this is real, we've got one, and everybody runs. And it turns out to be campers on a hillside.
It's very creative editing that went on there. And on CompuServe, there's a document what 48 hours didn't show. And I suggest you get hold of that.
Do you dispute that it was campers on a hillside?
No, the whole 48 hours show is kind of tongue in cheek, and it was demeaning not only to CSETI but to others. That was my opinion.
Well, as an emergency room physician, do you not feel, because I got to tell you,
I'm off duty when I go out into the field.
Exactly, but your belief system doesn't change. And as a medical oath, I mean, quite frankly, if you look into the subject of what you're talking about and the communication method you're looking at, you are endangering the public, doctor. And I would just feel that I would urge you, please, as an uninterested party, either way in this argument, know what you're doing before you deal with the technology.
Okay, Dave. Thanks for your call.
Thank you very much.
We're going to go to Patrick in Fairfield, California, who's joining us on Multivision. Patrick?
Yes.
Yes, good evening. You're on the air.
Go ahead.
Oh, very good. Thank you. First of all, hello, Don, Vicki, et al. I'm a first-time listener and, of course, a first-time caller. Very interesting show this evening.
Thank you.
I've spent several thousands of hours in laboratory experimentation in the field of parapsychology, just as an introduction. And I would ask Dr. Birx,
yes.
First of all, just as a unbiased, objective type of opinion from somebody you don't know, you do come across as somewhat pompous when you three or four times throw out, as a practicing emergency room physician, blah, blah, blah. Please, sir, that has nothing to do with this current topic, okay?
I think we're talking about people being scared, that's all. That was mainly what I was focusing on.
Okay, it simply comes across as if you are trying to use that doctor as God type of influence on the potential audience.
We ain't no gods, I can tell you that. No gods are we.
Anyway, as far as your protocols that you're talking about here, are those available to the public, or does one have to sign up in order to learn these?
There's a kit that you can purchase for $100, which goes through the whole thing, or you can, if you're online, the CompuServe has got a bunch of documents that describe, not in as much detail, the protocols, but that would be a more reasonable way of getting the information.
Okay, I was just kind of curious because, you know, I try to share everything I learn and use in the laboratory with as many people as I can at no charge. So, you know, I was just kind of curious as to why, if this was a successful technique, why you would not just simply tell us the techniques you're using over this and every other media that you can get your voice onto, so that we can all try.
I have spoken a number of times on radio, and I've been on television, and you know, this is all free of charge. It's not like some kind of business.
I understand, but as tonight's show shows, I'm sorry to have to say it that way. It does sometimes turn into a diatribe of arguments rather than.
This is the first time I've had so much heat. Usually I give my information out and people thank me and that's the end of it. So this is more exciting.
Yeah, actually, all I need to say now is thank you very much for the show, and I will continue to listen.
Well, Patrick, where you been the last 5 years?
Well, evidently not watching cable.
Well, look.
I've been in the sleep lab. That's where I've been.
Keep your eyes pointed up, and I hope we hear from you again.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to go to Pat in Lone Oak. I believe that's Arkansas, joining us on United Video. Pat?
Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You're on the air.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think this is the best program since you had Congressman Schiff on. However, I think that Dwight and your bride kind of hammered the good doctor initially. What I would like to hear is that y'all could work out whatever problem each of y'all have. I mean, both of y'all.
Oh, we don't have any problems. This was basically a give and take, sharing ideas and questioning methods and perhaps even some suppositions. But,
we're sorry if it sounded like
there's nobody in here with knives or pistols ready.
Well, maybe it was emotional, but it was meant to be a dialogue, and challenges can
debates do traded. get sometimes a bit heated, but that doesn't mean we hate each other.
Well, perhaps you can have him on and have him. It sounded initially like he was a captive, and not a guest. Maybe you can have him on as a guest.
Thank you. I'd like that, too.
Okay. Was that it, Pat?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I want to thank... Keep those eyes pointed upwards there, my friend.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We're going to go to North Carolina. We have Eric joining us from New Bern, North Carolina on SATCOM. Eric, good evening.
Good evening, Don, Dwight, Ziggy, and Joe.
Howdy.
Hi.
The question I have for Joe is... I've recently been talking with Dr. Richard Brotman of the Rhine Institute. He's the chief of the Journal of Parapsychology.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
His position on telepathic communication and psi and all that is that it's still a very questionable science. And I guess
you wrote the book,
The
Controversial Science, Parapsychology.
Right, exactly. My position is, are you putting the cart before the horse by trying to prove UFO contact with a non-proven science such as psi?
Well, it's certainly a controversial science. I would be the first to admit that. But people are having these kinds of experiences since the beginning of time. And what we're trying to do is leave no door closed in our efforts to make contact with the extraterrestrials. You know, it's not only C. Setti that talked about the possible importance of psi, but J. Allen Hynek, who is the grandpappy of ufology, in an interview back in the 80s, wrote that he was concerned about the Russians using psi to communicate with extraterrestrials. And so this idea of using unconventional techniques to communicate with ET is not something that belongs to C. Setti. It's an idea that's been out there.
Well, certainly you have to use unconventional techniques to break through barriers. Can we expect the Rhine Institute and C. Setti to get together on anything anytime soon?
Well, I promote his book. I strongly recommend it to anyone who wants to do work in the field, because we do have five senses, and some of us, perhaps majority of us, have a sixth sense. We have consciousness, and if that can help solve this UFO mystery, let's use it.
Okay, Eric, I want to thank you.
Thank you very
for your
much.
Call.
You,
keep those eyes pointed up. Joe, we've got to take another break, but before we do, I want to give you an opportunity to give a contact address for anyone that has...
If you'd like to learn more about C. Setti or join...
play this excerpt. Go ahead, Robert.
Also, put all of our names and contact numbers for who you can have contacted in the microcassette recorder for the documentation person.
Preston Dennett, contact Christine Dennett.
Hey, Dr. Joe Burks, contact Yael Burks.
Dixie Sullivan, contact my office.
We want to establish the various positions. We want to number off so that in the event that there is a landing, we know in what order we'll approach the craft. So I'll be boarding party member number one. Joe, you want to be number two? Dixie?
Three.
The last thing we want to do at this point is to determine where the landing site should be in the event that we're able to vector a craft in at close range.
All right, let's quit fooling around. Let's get back on the air here. I've heard enough of these damn commercials. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to go to Kelly, who's calling in from Reseda on CVI. Kelly, good evening.
Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Hey,
good
Dwight,
evening.
I saw you on, was it Voyager?
I think you did.
You're good.
Thank you.
Very interesting character. Very fun. Very fun. I've got some big-time breaking news as far as the alien autopsy is concerned.
Hey.
You guys might not have heard this, but the reason they call it the alien autopsy is because it's aliens doing the autopsy.
So, is that a time joke, Kelly? Do I get that when I'm 65?
Just a twist.
Okay. Question.
Here's my problem with C. Setti. I've seen them on sightings. I saw them on Larry King's special. And
nobody ever says they saw me on that Larry King special.
You were there for five or six seconds.
Yeah, and I gave them some of the most amazing film ever. They cut it in 9 parts. They only played 3 seconds of it.
Come on.
And I get, well, no, it's still, I'm upset about that.
It's history. Let's get, come on. Okay. You got this guest for 15 minutes.
Don, we've already covered the fact that you give good interviews. Now, here's my C. Setti comment. I mean, more power to guys who want to go out and spend the time to flash, you know, lights into the sky and to pursue the phenomenon. You know, I think they're kudos for those who are true true sky watchers. But on the other hand, Stephen Greer, as an expert on the subject of UFOs, it seems as though their activities were so sophomoric, I was embarrassed. And I was almost afraid that the UFO research field is just going to take another shot in the air when it comes to credibility. And now I hear it's a nonprofit organization and they're looking for money. And did somebody say something about a $10,000 donation? I think there's ways of parlaying nonprofit organizations into profit organizations. And I'm so concerned with the money aspect of the UFO phenomenon, with the autopsy film, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I guess I'm just throwing this up as sort of a jump-off for conversation.
Well, let me ask Dr. Burks if he has any comments or remarks. Do you want to address any of this?
You know, I've been a member of many nonprofit organizations, and I have no problem asking people to support a good cause. If it's not your cause, don't send us the money.
Well, that's pretty honest.
Well, that's pretty straightforward. But It's just the area of expertise. No one's really an expert in UFOs.
I agree with you. That's what I say in my public addresses. I don't think Greer or me or anyone else is the expert.
Beware of Greer. He's going to turn it into the Clyde Squad if you're not careful.
What squad?
The Clyde Squad.
Oh.
That's well, anyway, enough of my fun.
Well, Kelly, now that you've made me feel bad, I'm moving on.
See ya.
Good evening.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We're going to go to Linda in Ventura County, who's calling in on, Linda, what?
Avenue Cable.
Avenue, okay.
Hi, I wanted to say something. I've met Dr. Joseph Brooks at a MUFON meeting. I'm also a member of Yvonne Smith's Sarah Group.
Yes.
I'm also a criminal law student, and I have to say that I'm a skeptic all the way around. I have said that I have seen lights in the sky and have had strange dreams, but I have never ever said that I've ever been abducted by aliens. It's only when other people, reporters and interviewers, journalists, have said and printed, I am an alien abductee, whereas I've never said that. And
okay.
I think that has to be, that's my number one complaint in the whole UFO thing. Another thing is also, I want to commend Dr. Joseph Brooks and Dr. Greer and what they're doing. I have heard of interrupted lecture by Dr. Joseph Brooks in Newbury Park, and I actually sat next to him before the meeting at the dinner, and I was very, very impressed with what he had to say and what he delivered. My impression was that CSETI is not responsible for trying to convince the whole world that aliens or UFOs exist. But I want to commend them for trying to find an answer, for trying to find the proof. I think we're all trying to find proof. I have talked to MUFON investigators that have said, you are abducted by aliens. And I have asked them, if you say that I am, where's the proof? And I would like to say that I've been approached by many hypnotherapists, and they've also said, oh, I hear that you're an abductee. And it's like, what gives you the right to say that? Where's the proof that you have that I'm an abductee?
Right.
I'm still a skeptic. And I have to commend Dr. Joseph Brooks because I was sitting there just like feeling mad because it's like, oh, is this Dr. Joseph Brooks bashing nice? But I just wanted to say, I think in many ways, CSETI also wants to put an end to the skepticism. I don't think that there's total...
Skepticism is a very healthy attitude in this field. This is one of the things, Linda, that we have been railing against since UFO Magazine has been published and since this radio show came on the air. There are too many individuals out there with unproven, even in some cases, fraudulent assumptions about this field. And this is one of the things that causes so many people to regard all of UFO research as a fringe subject. This should be just as accountable to solid, ironclad scientific proofs as any other discipline. And over the years, there have been too many people that have discredited this field, and that's why it's so important to keep a skeptical attitude, not a debunking attitude, but a skeptical attitude about this. It can stand a healthy dose of skepticism.
Didn't you just call yourself a skeptic, Linda?
Oh, yes, but I wanted to commend Dr. Joseph Brooks.
I appreciate your sentiments. Thank you.
For at least trying, the thing that I admired was him and his group are actually going out there and trying to look for the answers, trying to get the answers, instead of all the researchers and investigators.
We're not armchair investigators, you're right. We're not armchair
investigators. Instead of, like, quote-unquote, hypnotherapists and investigators waiting for another abductee to have an experience so they could have another session, or wait for an abductee to have an implant or some kind of proof, I think that the experiences that people have are so frightening. I don't think that they really want to put themselves out there If I had the money, I would give him $10,000.
Okay.
Well, I would not go out there.
I could personally use it myself, Linda. So if you come
I
up
could
with
too
it,
at this point,
if you come
mind,
up
I'll
with it,
you.
Please think about us too. Hey, look, I want to thank you for your call. We've got to move along. We're short on time. We're going to go to Steve, who is calling in from Susan, California, on Multivision. Is that right, Steve?
Susan, real close.
Susan. Okay, thank you.
We're a sister city to Fairfield, California.
Okay.
How you doing, gentlemen?
We're fine.
Okay. I am running a nonprofit foundation called Psy Applications. I've called in once before. And I felt you need to really get involved in this conversation here. I want to comment that psi phenomenon and parapsychology as a field in the United States is not widely accepted. However, it has been widely accepted in research throughout the world. And psi phenomenon is a very real aspect of the UFO phenomenon and a very integrated part of it. The current scientific method as it exists is not sufficient enough to investigate the UFO phenomenon without encompassing psi phenomenon. Without encompassing psi phenomenon, the scientific method will not be able to investigate the UFO phenomenon. I have to commend Dr. Berg and the C-SETI organization for their attempt and their effort in encompassing psi to do this.
Thank you very much.
As you look back in all research material, all the way back into time, psi is a very real thing. Surely it can't be accepted by what is encompassed as the Western scientific method, and what that dictates is the need for that method to change and to adjust. Science wouldn't exist unless new things were discovered and envisioned, and those new things that were envisioned and discovered were things that weren't known at that current moment in time. So if we have to put everything that we don't know into the frame of now that we do know, we could never move forward.
Okay, out of time. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Well, that was Larry King telling us we're just about out of time. Steve, thank you for your call. Your points are well taken. Do we have any more there? No, I guess not. Well, we got just about a minute and a half, Dr. Joseph Burks of C-SETI.
Yeah,
you want once more to give out that address?
Well, I'd like to give out the address, but before I do, I'd like to say C-SETI message in a nutshell is, if you're out there and a UFO shows up, don't just stand there with your mouth open. Signal at it. Try to interact in some way, because more often than not, the UFO will signal back. And the number...
Okay, I would also like to point out that there have been many different interpretations about how one should act in close proximity to an unidentified flying object. About 35 years ago, Frank Edwards, who was a very well-known radio commentator across the United States and wrote several books on the UFO phenomenon, stated in one of his books, Flying Saucers, Serious Business, that one should be very careful approaching a landed UFO. There had been documented cases on record where people, in fact, were injured. If, in fact, you see one, I myself, speaking from my knowledge base, would suggest that someone be very careful in approaching said object. We certainly wouldn't want to hear about anybody that was, in fact, injured. That is it for another week. Dr. Burks, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
In.
Thank you for coming tonight.
Mr. Dwight Schultz,
you
we'll see
good.
You back in a week. Vicki, back next week with
maybe,
another
maybe
UFO
maybe
landing pad.
Good night, America.
Good night, guys. We'll see you in a week.